I kind of had a choice at that point.
Not just being patient with the process, but being grateful with the process.
And I'm like, man, I went to my dad straight after the game. I'm like, yo, like this shit can't happen anymore, man. I always try to take the good out of any negative situation.
You know, I have players coming in, Xavier, and they'd be like, you know, I played so bad. You know, sometimes I'd be like, hey, bro, hey, I don't know, we can't do nothing about that. I can tell you what we can do, we can get some work in right now.
Like, if you're not doing plyometrics, you're losing out on a lot of potential for performance.
My dad had these tapes of the Laker game. I got to a point where I said, you know, I want to play basketball. And I just always wanted to make sure I had the edge over people.
It became a part of me, you know, I didn't want anybody to get to be better than me.
This episode is brought to you by Whoop. Whoop is the only 24/7 wearable technology that measures the everyday stressors both inside and outside of work and training. Whoop measures the physiological data related to sleep, including the quality, duration, and consistency of sleep, strain, which is the internal load from external stress, and recovery, which is the readiness to perform. Whoop uses these three key metrics to call out areas for improvements and reinforce positive habits. If you're looking to join the team, use my discount code BBALL at checkout or just click the link in my description to get a free 30-day trial with Whoop. Come join the team. Let's level up together. Welcome to another episode of the Basketball and Barbells podcast. Today we have a very special guest. It's been a while since we had a guest. Kind of started to go solo a little bit, just to kind of get my own stuff out there. But today we have somebody who I've been following for a while, man. I've actually been following for about 10 years now, 26, so following since I was about 16. Today we have Dre Baldwin, a.k.a. Dre All Day. If you don't know who he is, I mean, you've probably been living under a rock. This dude is everywhere. Former 9-year professional athlete turned author, speaker, entrepreneur. This dude has been working for the past 15 years to help change the lives of millions of entrepreneurs. He actually created his own brand, Work On Your Game Incorporated, and is a pioneer for influencers on YouTube because this dude literally was the first person that I can remember and probably the first person ever to ever share a workout video, especially specifically for basketball. Dre's leveraged that popularity and branding with Nike, Wendy's, Gatorade, the G League, you name it. He's created over 400 products, written over 25 books, has online courses for entrepreneurs, masterclasses, given 4 TED Talks. Basically, this man is a content monster. Dre, thank you so much for being on the show, man.
Man, that's a hell of an introduction, so thank you. I appreciate you having me here on the show. I'm excited to be here. I'm going to give as much value as we can to your audience.
For sure, man. So for those who are under a rock and don't know who you are, can you touch on your background? We'll go more in depth as we go, but yeah. Can I tell them where you're from? You know, obviously you hooping, you know, kind of your journey going into professional sports, like, you know, who is Dre?
Yeah, I'll give you the 90-second version of it. I'm sure we'll get some more of it as we get into it. But I'm originally from the city of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, born and raised. Started playing basketball around the age of 14. I was always into sports. So we played, you know, my friends had like the backyard court that we would lower it so we could dunk and things like that. But I wasn't serious playing. First, I played football, street football, tried to play team football, but my parents couldn't afford the equipment. So I never really got serious with football. Played baseball for a little bit. Wasn't really good at that. Finally, around 14, started trying basketball. And of course, wasn't good at first when I started. But for some reason, I just stuck with basketball. And eventually, I started to develop a little bit of skill. And this is all practicing on my own. You know, neither of my parents is an athlete. I have one sister. She's not an athlete. Nobody in the neighborhood, you know, took me under their wing or anything like that. And this is pre-YouTube. We're talking the 90s here. So this is pre-YouTube. Pre-Instagram, there weren't any programs to buy, none of that. I just figured it out on my own, just learning and practicing and trying things. I developed some skill, finally made my high school team after 3 years, unsuccessfully trying out, made it as a senior, sat on the bench, averaging 2 points a game, went on to walk on at a Division III school to play college ball, did okay there. I didn't set the world on fire playing college basketball, and again, it was only at the D3 level. So graduating college, it didn't look like I was going to become anything in the sports world, even though I had a business degree, but I still had an inkling, an idea that I could make it happen. So I was able to hustle my way into playing professional basketball overseas. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that. While doing that, at the same time that I started that career, I posted a short little highlight clip that I had on his new website that had just come out called YouTube.com. This was in 2005. And that's where most people who know of me, they know of me from the internet. Most people never saw me play overseas, but they saw me on YouTube. And that's where I started to build what we began to call a personal brand a few years later. So around 2009, probably Xavier, around the time you started finding me, that's when I started publishing videos every day. So that's right. When people really started to find me through the basketball stuff. And through the basketball, I started talking a little bit more about mindset things because players were asking me about those. And that planted the seed for what I do now. So for the last 5 years, since I stopped playing ball in 2015, I am full-time CEO, owner of my company, Work On Your Game Incorporated, where what we do is take the mental tools necessary to succeed in sports and teach people how those tools can be applied in business, life, and of course, for the athletes, how they can apply in sports.
Sure, man. Honestly, there's so much in there that I can pick apart. But I think the biggest thing that I want to start off with was just the fact that you were able to create your own path. Obviously, before YouTube, Instagram, like nowadays, I mean, I get players, you know, I train athletes, you know, basketball players. I'll get athletes that hit me up on IG all the time. You know, what workouts can I do for this, you know, vertical jump. And so it's a lot easier because they have access to so much more. But you did it when they had, you know, I remember reading and hearing some of your stories, but just like VHS tapes, you know, you had to buy like N1 mixtapes, kind of watch those, go practice the moves outside. Do you feel like being that resourceful in that time has helped separate you from a lot of people that kind of came up with you? Because now you're in a position where you can kind of figure out on your own, where a lot of people want a helping hand or a handout.
Do you mean other players or you mean other creators?
Other creators.
Well, when it comes to other creators, I think, first of all, we have to recognize a little bit of luck and timing as part of it, because, I mean, luck is a big part of success in life, and it also can be a big part of failure. I actually was writing an article about that today. But anyway, when it comes to me, I got out of school in 2004, and I went to an exposure camp. That's where I had my VHS tape, and that VHS tape became my first YouTube video. Well, a highlight from that VHS became my first YouTube video. This is in 2005. This is the same year YouTube came out. Now, anyone who will go online right now and look up any one of my YouTube videos, and Xavier, you know, I am not an editor. So my videos would usually be just straight up. I would just take what I did on the court and slap it right on YouTube. The only thing I would do is cut out, you know, after I shoot the ball, it goes in. I go get the ball and get back to the spot and start over. That's all I would cut out. There's no edits. There are no fancy graphics. There's no a lot of videos. There's no music. There's no intro, outro, everybody knows the intro, dreallday.com. That's it. That's it. I'm not an editor. So years later, let's say if I had come out of school 10 years later and tried to do the same thing, people may not have even found me, even though my stuff was good, simply because people demanded a higher quality of video in 2015 than what they were requiring in 2006. So that part of it definitely played a role for me. So just recognizing that luck and timing for me, but I did take advantage of it. But to answer your question, just having to be resourceful and come up with things on my own, did that play a role? I think, Xavier, it played a bigger role when it came to my mentality. And that mentality is still a part of me to this very day, in that I didn't want to jump on the wave of something that was, you know, already happening. A bunch of people were already doing it. So being that I had to figure out basketball when it came to actually playing, I had to figure it out on my own with no one showing me how to play or practice or anything. There were no examples out there. I had to develop the discipline, first of all, to keep trying to see what works. I had to develop the mental toughness to keep trying when things were not working and people were looking at me like, why do you keep trying to play basketball? Because obviously not getting you any results. And I had to be confident enough to even believe in myself when there was nothing tangible in my environment, at least as far as I was concerned, that said I was going to become a success in basketball besides some thought that I had in my mind, which, again, nobody could see. And this is, again, we're talking the 90s when there wasn't all this self-help and personal development material out there that I could point to and say, OK, here's a guy and here's a guy and here's three girls talking about why you need to believe even before you have success. This is just something that I had in my brain when this was not mainstream. It wasn't a normal thing. So to answer your question, it was a lot more on the mental side that it helped me than it was on a physical slash tangible side.
Right. No, I like that, man. I think even just kind of hearing your story, and I kind of want to talk about that too, even just the basketball and the failure aspect of it that you kind of touched on, it kind of, I would say in a sense, like inspired me, you know, because there are times where I'm trying to figure something out. When I first got started, nobody actually wanted to train with me. You know, I was new. I was 21 years old. And I'm like, nobody wants to work with somebody who's never played at a high level. You know, I played in high school, actually got hurt trying to play in college. So I never went pro. And now I have pros, or I'm training now. But back then, it was almost like I had to figure it out. So even my traditional path, you know, I kind of looked at Dre and I'm like, all right, well, Dre figured this shit out. You know, how can I figure this out? And so I think you are absolutely right. It's the mentality that, you know, it's going to have to get done one way or another. And if it's going to be the untraditional path, then so be it. And that's why I definitely, like, one thing about you that I definitely, you know, really respect is the fact that you figure this shit out regardless if you have a clear path in front of you or not. And speaking of that, you know, talk about a little bit more about, like, you playing basketball. You said you were cut 3 years in a row, but then ended up playing, you know, your varsity year or your senior year playing on varsity. I want to talk a little bit more about that in terms of just kind of like the mindset that you had to keep attacking, because most people after 2 years would quit at that point. After 3 years, you know, that's like pushing it. So what was it that kept driving you to continue to try out, even though the past 3 years you had been cut?
Well, you're absolutely right. You know, coming from where I come from, if anybody here who's from the inner city, you know, especially with African-American males, everybody tries their hand at basketball for at least a year or two. Everybody has that little period where they think they can play ball. So in high school, my high school, I went to high school at ENS High School in North Philadelphia. We didn't have, it wasn't a lot of funding, apparently, because we only had varsity. There was no JV. There was no freshman team. And even the varsity coach, it was just a coach. He didn't even have an assistant coach. And he was a teacher, you know, gym teacher in school. So the freshman year trying out, you know, I didn't think it was that, you know, serious. If I made it, that'd be great. But I didn't care if I didn't make it. I didn't really think I was going to, and I didn't. Then sophomore year, same thing. But junior year, that's like, all right, I'll use that as my warm-up year. And then senior year, I'll dominate and get me a scholarship and all that. So when it didn't work out, your question was, well, how did I keep going when it wasn't working?
Yeah, what was the mentality behind continuing to push, even though you had all that failure behind you? Because a lot of people, like at that point, would have just walked away from that.
Right. So a lot of kids that age, and listen, I knew these kids because they're in my neighborhood. I would see them. Everybody thought, we all, when we were around 13, 14, 15, we all thought we could play ball. We would keep trying. Maybe not make it as a freshman, then we keep going. And then slowly, year by year, I would just see players just start to fall off. Players that I knew from being at the playgrounds, because I was a guy who, I never hung out, you know, on street corners like that. I wasn't doing anything outside other than playing sports. I was either going to school, going to my part-time job, or I was going to the playground to play ball. So these other guys, I knew them from seeing them at the playground around age 14, 15. But then I would start seeing them around 16, 17. They'd be at the playground, but instead of coming with their shorts to play, they'd be coming with their, you know, their street clothes on, and they'd just be standing on the sidelines watching. Or they'd be talking to a girl, or they'd be smoking something, or they'd be doing something else.
Yeah,
but it'd be the same guys, but they just weren't playing ball anymore. And slowly but surely, year after year, more and more of them would come to the playground still, but they weren't playing. So for me, after my junior year when I got cut, this is the year when people are like, all right, if you're going to be a basketball player, this is the year you're supposed to make the team. When I didn't make the team for about 2 weeks, I figured to myself, or obviously this basketball thing is not going to work. And I'm the type of person, I've always been into visualization even before I knew what it was called. I didn't know it was a thing, but I always been a person, Xavier, who liked to visualize what I was going to become. And that would be like my inspiration, my motivation to keep trying and doing my thing. But when I didn't make it my junior year, I started telling myself, okay, I need to start visualizing something else, because obviously it's not going to be basketball. So for that 2 week period, I was trying to figure out what else could I do. I was asking myself, well, maybe I could be maybe get into music, because my father's into music, but I never really had talent or really inclination for music. Maybe I could be more serious about school and see what I could do with that. But I knew that wasn't going to work out, because I didn't care about school like that. I cared enough to graduate, but not enough to take it that serious. And so, but then my vision kept coming back to basketball. I kept getting these, just visualizing myself doing something with basketball, but at the same time, looking at quote unquote reality that this is not working. So it was just this conflict that I had in my mind. This is, you know, 16 years old trying to figure this out. I didn't have anyone to talk to about it. I didn't ask anyone about it. This is just what I'm thinking, while at the same time dealing with the embarrassment of, here's this guy 3 years in a row, didn't make the basketball team. He doesn't do anything but play basketball. Can't even be successful at that. So I heard in my neighborhood, there was a local recreational league team for like 16 and under league. And someone told me about it. And I said, all right, let me just go play on this team. Since I keep getting this visualization of basketball, let me play on this team. I played on that 16 and under team. I was one of the go-to guys on that team. We were a pretty good team. And that built my confidence up again for basketball. So during that season, when I would have a good game, one of the local coaches would say, man, you should be playing on your school team. I mean, you're obviously good enough to play on the school team. You need to get on that school team. So that built my confidence back up. So then my senior year, I tried out again. I actually did make the team. So what kept me going, to answer your question, was just that I kept getting that vision that basketball is going to be the thing, even though reality was telling me that it wasn't.
Right. No, I love that, man. It's crazy because even kind of in it's my own story, I think it's part of life. You know, failure is necessary. And you talk about that a lot. And a lot of, you know, I would say speakers talk about failure. But I don't think a lot of people realize how necessary it is until they go through it. Like, we all know it's important to eat healthy, but until you start eating healthy and realize how shitty you feel when you don't, like, you're not really going to take it that serious, in my opinion. And for me, it was kind of the same thing where I failed as a trainer. I had my first head job. I was 22, and they actually let me go later on that year. And that was kind of a point where I was in the same mindset where I'm thinking to myself, damn, okay, you know, I'm 22. I just got let go of my first job. Nobody's picking up the phone for me. No D1 school, no D2 school, not even junior colleges. So I'm thinking to myself, shit, you know, I don't know what this is going to look like for my the rest of my life. So I got a regular job. I was working at Sears. But the same thing, I kept getting visions of just training basketball players. I didn't know why. I would just think to myself, you know, this would be cool if I worked with this player. This would be cool if I worked with this player. But it's like it kept coming back to that. And then I finally had a conversation with my girlfriend. She just said, you know, why don't you just try it? So I volunteered. And then 2 years later, I've worked with players that play the NBA, G League, overseas. But it's the same, I guess, mentality that you had, where part of that mentality of seeing yourself doing something and then pushing yourself to kind of go back and try again. I think a lot of people, like you talked about, the kids would show up, they'd play 1 year, maybe two, then they show up in street clothes. And at that point, it's just like, all right, well, why should I keep trying? And so what I want to ask you is, do you feel like, and it could be more, but do you feel like that moment where you failed, quote unquote, 3 years in a row, but made it your senior year, do you feel like that was like the pivotal moment going forward in your life where you realized that the discipline of showing up, the consistency, and then the resilience to show up after you, quote unquote, fail? Do you feel like that's something that pushed you going for the rest of your life and maybe something that you kind of look back on and maybe that helped build you to where you are now?
I wouldn't say that exact moment. I would say mm-hmm. that moment mattered because it kind of gave me validation amongst mm-hmm. my peers. I don't know how much, I mean, actually I do know now as an adult that they probably weren't thinking about me as much as I thought they were thinking about me, because we all are, you know, self-centered in our own lives.
Right.
But it validated me in that, all right, I tried out 4 years in a row. I can actually say that I did make it 1 year. So that made all the effort worth it. But the moment that really did it for me, I think when it came to basketball, that led to the rest of my life, actually happened that summer. Can I tell you that story?
Absolutely.
Okay. So in Philadelphia, where I'm from, there's this, I guess you can call it AAU type of league. It's called the Sunny Hill League, which is a very prominent league for amateur players in the Philadelphia region. So any player you know who's from that area, from Jersey or southeastern Pennsylvania, has played there. So we're talking Kobe Bryant, Rip Hamilton, DeJuan Wagner, Tim Thomas, Jameer Nelson, any player who's from that the Philadelphia area who has been somebody, Wilt Chamberlain even back then, played in this league called the Sunny Hill League. So this is the year 2000. That's when I was a senior in high school. I went to a tryout. I just seen a flyer on a billboard. Hey, tryout for a Sunny Hill League team. I didn't know who the team was. I didn't know who was coaching or anything. It just said Sunny Hill League. That's all they needed to get people to show up. So I go to this tryout, and it was only about enough players to fill, let's say, two basketball teams. But every player in that gym, so when I was growing up, for just to go back in the story, this is before the internet was the internet. The All City, every time we played a game in high school, you looked in the newspaper, like the actual physical newspaper that you bought at the newsstand, to see what everybody else did. So you see what your stats were, how many, who won each game and all that. So in the newspaper at the end of the season, they would print the All City teams. Like it'd be like 12 guys on the first team, 12 guys on the second team. So I walk into the gym for this tryout for the Sunny Hill League team, and it's basically the All City team is in the gym. These are all the best players in the city. I knew who these guys were, even though I had never met them, just by their name recognition and face recognition. And I don't know if you remember, Xavier, because I'm a little bit older than you, but the number one player in the nation in the year 2000 was a guy named Eddie Griffin. And he played at a Roman Catholic high school. He ended up going to Seton Hall, played in the NBA. He was a top 10 draft pick. He passed away a few years ago, tragically. But he was on the team. He was in the gym. And these are just all the best players. So I go in there and try out. I'm the only nobody in the gym, the only one. And they didn't cut me. I definitely was probably the worst player in there compared to those guys, but I was holding my own. So there was sometimes I would make a move on a guy and it would work. I would steal the ball from one of these players who had a D1 scholarship or on their way to a D1 scholarship. And I was just holding my own in there, and I would actually earn some respect in that gym. None of the guys in there ever bothered to learn my name, but I had proven that I could actually play with these guys. And that's the thing actually that gave me the confidence to know, like, hey, I can compete with people at the highest level as long as I have the belief in myself. And the other thing was, I probably didn't recognize it then, but I recognize it now. There was no pressure on me because nobody was expecting me to be anything in there. Everybody in there was a name brand guy, D1 scholarship guy. I was the only person in there who nobody knew. Therefore, without that pressure, I just had to go out and play my game. And that's what gave me the confidence then. That after that summer, that's when I went to college and everything happened from there.
Right. No, that's dope, man. It's almost like you said, you just saw it randomly. You showed up. You know, I think a lot of players, people in general, would have just been intimidated just with the fact that, man, maybe, you know, I don't know if I stack up against them. And even if they did show up, they could easily see those players in there and just shrink out the opportunity. Right. And that's why nobody showed up. Exactly.
I was the only one who showed up that wasn't invited. Yeah.
Right, man. And that's the thing. Like, I think we surprise ourselves. I always tell people, like, hey, man, you'll surprise yourself at what you're capable of. And I don't think people give themselves enough credit to even show up and just try. They just think, oh, like, that's too much for me. But I'm like, you know, at that point, if you're feeling that way, I always tell them, like, look, man, like, just surprise yourself. Just show up. And you talk about every opportunity, like, making the most of it. Like, you showed up. It's not like you just showed up and then you shit the bed. You know, you actually showed up and made the team. You know, essentially, they kept you on the team, regardless if they knew your name or not. You were still able to compete, and that proved to yourself, like, oh, I can actually do this thing long term. But speaking of that, I kind of want to push forward a little bit in the story into when you started playing overseas or just before you played overseas. So I kind of followed your story, and I heard you talk about it a couple times where you were working full-time jobs. You were still going to LA Fitness when it was open, LA Fitness in the mornings, playing, going to work, trying to play after your job. Talk a little bit about kind of just the mentality of doing that for about a year or maybe 2 years when you weren't necessarily getting the results. Maybe you didn't have a contract. You know, what was your mentality like trying to play the long game? Because in this day and age, everyone is all about the instant gratification. You know, what made you feel like it was an opportunity that was going to present itself, even if it was going to take 2 or 3 years?
Man, I'm glad you asked about that. Because a lot of people don't ask about that. When they're looking at my background, but you know about that because you know my story. So that right there, that year plus, I would say year plus, because even after I got my first deal, and I'll explain that, I was back home like 6 to 8 weeks later, and then I had to get another job after that. That year plus was probably the most important year for me to have become who I've become to this day. So after graduating college, I went to Penn State Altoona. I have a degree from Penn State University, business degree. I got home and my parents said, what do you want to do with your life? I said, I want to play basketball. And they thought that was crazy because, I mean, they knew my background. I hadn't barely played in high school. I only played at D3 in college. And even if you don't know sports, once you realize what D3 is, you're like, okay, most D3 athletes, they play in college, they have their fun, then they go and they'll do something else. And I hadn't even played my senior year because a new coach had replaced the coach who recruited me. I wasn't even on the team. Right. It's like, all right, you had your fun with basketball. Now it's time to be an adult and get a real job. So that's what my parents were thinking. And that was completely reasonable and logical. But I had this idea of playing ball. But of course, they're like, well, you don't have any prospects or anything like that. They asked me, do you have any prospects? Like, you have a job offer or anything like that? And the answer was no. So I had to get something. So I went and worked at Foot Locker as an assistant manager for 6 months. That was my first job out of college. Thank you, Penn State, for the degree. And I went and worked at Bally Total Fitness, which is a gym that's out of business now, but just recently. And then I saved up my money. It was $250 in cash to go to this event called an exposure camp. I went to the exposure camp, and this is a whole year after graduation. So this is the summer after, 1 year after graduation. Saved up that $250. Me and a couple of my teammates drove from Philly to Orlando, my college teammates, to Orlando. 17-hour drive overnight to get to this exposure camp. We pulled up in the parking lot at 9 a.m. on a Saturday morning. The camp started at 9 a.m. on Saturday morning. Played there, did my thing. That's how I got my game footage, that VHS tape that became my first YouTube video. And that VHS tape, I also shopped myself around to agents to get signed to an agent. That agent got me my first contract. That's in August of 2005. Actually, right around this time, 2005. To start my professional basketball career. Now, I'm in Lithuania playing. I was there for about 6-8 weeks, something like that. Then I was right back home again. And it's not like I had enough money to just go, you know, live large after that. So I'm right back at my parents' house. And I went and got a job at a supermarket. And I was working overnight at the supermarket. So for those of you who don't know what happens overnight at a supermarket, there's a bunch of trucks that come in at night. You ever see those big trucks that are pulling up to the back of a supermarket?
Yeah.
So inside of those big trucks, a whole bunch of boxes. All right? And inside those boxes, are all the stuff that people buy every day. And there's a whole crew, like it's a whole full staff of people who spend the whole overnight shift from, like, let's say the supermarket closes at 11 and it opens at 7. So from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m., you open those boxes and you restock the shelves with all the stuff that people bought during the day. So I had, that was my job. Now, this is, I want y'all to understand, I want to paint a picture for everyone. I got a college degree in business. I have spent a year working all just to get myself ready to play professional basketball. I made it happen. Got a job playing basketball. That job ended. I'm back home, living in my parents' house with no car. I'm borrowing my mom's car to drive to my overnight job. And then I'm dropping her off at work in the morning and going back home and sleeping from like 8 in the morning till 12 in the afternoon. I'm working overnight, stocking shelves at a supermarket and looking at the other people who were working there. The people who work overnight in a supermarket, at 23 years old with a college degree, you don't expect to be these people to be your associates. Let's just put it that way. And I'm just looking at myself like, all right, what the hell? I'm making like maybe $15 an hour. And I'm like, what the hell? What am I doing right now? That was probably when I'm working at that supermarket, was probably the lowest point in my life, because we're even working at the gym and the Foot Locker before that wasn't that bad because I hadn't tasted the overseas life yet. I'm still looking at it like, all right, this is going to happen. I'm going to make this happen. So then when I made it happen and then I came home and then I had to go back to working a regular job, that was even worse because I knew what it felt like to have quote unquote made it, because before that I hadn't made it yet. So I had nothing to compare it to. So that was the worst period when I was working at that supermarket, the overnight job. But luckily, my agent, my first agent who I had, I only worked there for about a week. Now, I hadn't even gotten my first paycheck yet. And he called me with another job opportunity to go play. And that was actually it wasn't the last time I had to work a regular job, but it was the last time for about a year I had to work a regular job. But answering your question in general, that year was the most important for me because that's the period where, as you already touched on, Xavier, that's when people give up, when they are trying and it's not working, they're trying, it's not working. It's cute when you're 16, 17, you're trying and something's not working. People say, oh, you want to be a basketball player? Yeah, you can do it. Go for your dreams. No, believe in yourself. And all the cliches that people give you, people stop giving you those cliches when you're about 22, 23. Now they're like, all right, you're a grown man. When are you going to
pay the bills?
When are you going to face reality? If you're living in your parents' house, when are you going to move out? You know, when are you going to go do something? So now it's time to get serious. So at that point, I was just working, you know, saving up my money, what little bit of money I was making at those jobs that I could, and enough to pay my cheap auto insurance and put gas in my car, pay my cell phone bill. And I would just work out, just keep working out. And I knew that I had to have my eye on the summertime because I knew that the exposure camps, for those who don't know what that is, that's like a job fair for athletes where you play your sport and try to show off your game and get a contract. I knew they came up every summer. So I said, all right, I'll work on my game during the year. I got me a job at a gym, so that's perfect. I can work out and lift weights for free, and then I can just be ready for this exposure camp. And I knew that exposure camp, that 2 to 3 day camp, that was my whole window to either make something happen or not. So once I was able to save up that money and I knew where I was going, I had to negotiate believe it or not, with my boss just to get those 2 days straight off from my job, just so I could drive to Orlando, play in that camp. No, came home from Orlando, drove back. I had to go to work that Monday morning. I had to be at work and, you know, make up the time that my boss had given me off from that job. So I didn't even, it's not like I went straight from exposure camp to, you know, flying overseas and everything's perfect from there. I had to go back home, kept working for another 2 months. Then I got my job with my agent. So I know that's a long answer to your question, but that was a really important year for me because it was the mental toughness to keep believing that it could happen and the discipline to keep working on my game and keep looking for the opportunity, even though there was nothing, again, in my immediate reality that said it was going to happen.
Right. No, I love it, man. Honestly, I think it's amazing because, like you said, you know, it's the mental toughness part of it, right? Like you're continuing to show up to work, you know, you're working in the supermarket. You know, I think you touched on an article I read in a while ago, but I can only imagine because, you know, at the time in my own life, you know, I was working at Sears, you know, like full-time job, showing up, cubicle, like literally the cliche full-time job. Like I was doing that. And I was kind of in the same boat of you as you mentally, where I'm going on break and I'm just kind of sitting there thinking, you know, what am I doing? You know, I was interning at a D1 school, working with basketball players, you know, working with the women's team USF in South Florida. They just went to the NCAA tournament and I'm here, you know, don't get me wrong, everyone needs to pay their bills, but I'm sitting here kind of eating lunch with these people who don't even want to be here. And I damn sure don't want to be there. And it was just kind of the mentality of, I think the same thing you were talking about. It's just like, I don't know how it's going to happen. I don't know when it's going to happen, but just to keep showing up and to continue to try it, how can I figure out, how can I make sure I'm in a position to train athletes and make that my full-time job? And so one thing that I love that you said, man, was just, even though you were still doing all these things, you were still showing up to camps, driving 17 hours to go to this exposure camp. You were saving up money, paying for that, having to work the next day, having to negotiate your time off, but then still having to work in between that, still have to do what you had to do, but it wasn't happening overnight. And I think in this generation, and don't get me wrong, I'm still kind of part of this generation too, because I'm still 25, 26. I think a lot of them expect it to happen overnight. And when it doesn't, you know, it's even more, I guess, deflating. You know, obviously like a lot of people will quit after 1 or 2 years, but it's even worse, in my opinion, with this generation. They don't have that discipline to continue to show up day after day. So one thing I wanted to ask you too is when you finally got to that point where I know you were kind of blogging, you know, once you were overseas, where was the kind of that point that you felt like you wanted to 100% be an entrepreneur and be on your own? Because I know you had thought about it. I know that was something that you always wanted to be in control of your own situation once you were overseas. Where was kind of that pivotal moment where you felt like, okay, I made it overseas, you've been playing for a couple of years. Where was that moment where you said, you know what, I want to be in control of my own destiny? And what was it that pushed you to make that decision?
Well, that actually happened way before when I was in college. So when I was in college, somebody had put up some, like one of those banners, one of those little, what do they call it? Like a leaflet with the little phone number things that you could rip off at the bottom.
Yeah.
If you're interested in making money, unlimited income potential, long story short, it was like a network marketing opportunity that the guy was pitching. This is on my college campus. So I went to a couple of the meetings when I got home to Philadelphia in the summertime, and I didn't stay in network marketing, but I got some really valuable things from network marketing. I actually did a masterclass episode on this. And one of the things that I got from it was that they were always at the meetings, they would always say stuff like, when you get out of the meeting, go stop by the table outside of the room in the hotel and buy some of the books. You know, get some of those books and it'll help you build your mindset. It'll help you understand business and money and things like that. And then they kept using this phrase that I never heard of. They said it was personal development. I never heard of this phrase. And they were name dropping these people. They were saying Jim Rohn, Brian Tracy, Napoleon Hill. I never heard of these people. But they were saying, get these books, these personal development books will make you smarter, this and that. And when I would go to the meetings, they would be talking about stuff that would just connect with me. When they would talk about, you know, doing things to make yourself more valuable and reading books to make you smarter and understanding things. And they would explain certain concepts, not about network marketing, but just about business and life and thinking in general. And I would say, yes, like those are the kind of things like those. I was eating it up. It was perfect. Sure. So then I went in. I didn't even have any money. So I'm a broke college student at this point. So I never bought any of the books. But when I got back to school the following year, this is when eBay was, you know, just starting to become a thing. I remembered those books and I went on eBay and I looked up a couple of the books and I bought them for 99 cents a piece. It was two books. It was Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill and it was Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. 99 cents a piece. And when I bought them, I got like a Word document file emailed to me by the person who was selling them. So this is way back in the day, y'all. This is nowadays you could download a Word document free, but you had to buy it back then. So I bought these books and I remember reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Just the first two or three chapters of the book spoke to me because Rich Dad, for those of you who don't know what that book is, it's an allegorical tale of this man explaining how he had his regular dad who was a really hardworking, smart guy who had a quote unquote regular job. And then his best friend's dad was a also hardworking, smart guy, but he owned a business. And his best friend's dad was much more financially free than his real dad. And he was basically, the book was explaining the differences between the two men. And it wasn't about their effort level or their talent or their skill. It was just about the way that they thought about money. And what Robert Kiyosaki was explaining there was how entrepreneurs basically give themselves they have the potential to create financial freedom because they're not trading their time for money always. And understanding is not just about how smart and hardworking you are, how much money you end up making in life. And that spoke to me because growing up, I had always been around people who worked regular 9-to-5 jobs. Or even if they did do a business, they were doing all the work in the business. They didn't have leverage in their businesses. So they were basically self-employed is what they called it. And here's the challenge with that. Even though I love my parents and the adults who were around me growing up, they were all good people, positive people, stayed above the law. They were within the lines of the law, rather. And they were good people doing positive things, hardworking, all of that. The problem was they never talked about work as if they were excited about work. They would say things like, I have to go to work, or no, right, the weekend's almost over, man. Now I got to go to work Monday. And they would say it kind of like tongue in cheek, but it was a real thing. Like, man, I got to go back to, they hated Sunday evenings because they knew that meant they got to go to work on Monday. Same way that I hated school, going to school on Monday, they had to go to work on Monday. On top of the fact that they were always at work, I would say, okay, maybe it's okay to be at work all the time if you can exchange that. In exchange for being at work all the time, you at least have the resources to do what you want to do. You get the car you want, live in the house you want, go on vacation when you want. We didn't have that either. So my parents would say things like, money doesn't grow on trees. I remember I told my mom when I was turning 16 and I wanted a car, and she looked at me like, you're crazy for even saying those words out of your mouth without even asking me, did you look up a car? How much did the car cost? She didn't even consider that. She just said, we can't afford it. And I'm like, man, y'all are always at work. You don't have any free time. We never went on a vacation. I never went on a vacation until I was an adult and I paid for it. And right. It seemed like they weren't happy about work. So where's the goodness in this life? And I'm looking at them and I'm looking at myself. And I'm like, okay, so the program here is go to school, get good grades, which my parents were serious about, get a college degree. They were serious about that. And then you graduate and then you get a job so I can go do what y'all are doing, maybe just at a little bit higher level, maybe marginally better than that. I said, I don't want to live that life, but I didn't know if there was any other way. The thing is, Xavier, I would look at, sometimes I'll be up late on a Saturday night watching TV, and there was a show called Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. I don't know if you remember the show, but those of you who are old enough might remember it. But there would be this guy with this like really great voice, and he would be showing off these really rich people and the lives they lived and these big mansions and these cars they had and green grass in front of their houses. I didn't have any of that. And I'm like, all right, maybe I wasn't thinking I was going to become one of them. I thought maybe I could. But one thing I did know is that I know that these people don't do what my parents are doing every day. Whatever they're doing, it ain't the same thing. So whatever it was, my mind was open to, if I could find out what that was, I wanted to see it. So when I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad and Robert Kiyosaki started explaining entrepreneurship, I said, okay. So when I get on the bus and I go to the mall that's out in the suburbs and I drive past these houses and I see two cars outside of the house, not one car or zero cars like we had sometimes, but two cars or three cars. And I see these big yards with nice grass, and I see rabbits running around. And I'm like, man, well, these people must be doing something different than what around me are doing, because I don't see any of that in the neighborhood that I come from. They got to be doing something different. And then I started realizing, oh, these people are doing something else. So that planted in my mind in 2001. So I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur back then, Xavier. So then it was a detour through playing basketball. But I knew my future, my quote unquote retirement plan, what I could do forever, even when I can't dunk anymore, is to be an entrepreneur where I can create something out of nothing. I can sell it. I can use leverage. It's not just about me. Because even being an athlete, your body is your business. So if something goes wrong with your body, you're out of business and you might not be right. getting a check. But with entrepreneurship, you can use not only your brain, which doesn't go as quickly as your athleticism, but also you can leverage your knowledge and put systems in place to where you can make money even when you're not the one at work. So I always had that mentality of getting into entrepreneurship. It was just a matter of when it was going to happen, sooner or later, with being a basketball player, to answer your question.
No, that's an amazing answer. Honestly, I think what you said was pretty profound that I tell players all the time. And it's not a matter of if, you know, they're going to stop playing, but a matter of when, because everyone's going to hang it up. MJ did it, you know, Kobe, rest in peace. When he was playing, he had to retire. So like you said, eventually that body is going to begin to fade away, the athleticism. So what are you going to do afterwards? And what you did was like, you were always had that mentality, always that thought process, like, I want to be in control of my own destiny. And when the opportunity presented itself, you know, you had been building yourself up at the time. Maybe, you know, I kind of read a little bit about, but you saying you hadn't really planned on, you know, blocking to become something much more. But I will kind of want to touch on a little bit, like, work on your game, you know, when you created it and what's the mindset. You know, I'm part of the game group. I listen to your podcast, so I know what it is. But for those who don't know, you know, what is the work on your game mindset? And talk a little bit about how you kind of came about creating this system, this process, this mindset mentality.
Sure. So I was making these basketball videos. That's how I first, you know, came to be known on the internet. And for the most part, the first few years from, let's say, 2005 through 2009, 2010, I would just post a video of me doing some drills and things like that. And I wasn't even talking on the videos. I wasn't even speaking. You didn't even hear my voice. You didn't know who I was. You just seen this guy on the court practicing. And then players started asking me in the comments, because I would always read and reply to the comments. They would just ask me about my background, like, who are you, where you're from, or what school did you go to, who do you play for, things like that. So as I started telling them more of my story through answering questions, I realized, all right, let me just make a video and just answer some of these questions that people keep asking, which is what I still do to this very day through written content, audio, and, you know, even paid products, is I just answer questions that people are asking. But I made videos where I would tell my story. I didn't make my high school team, so I was a senior. I walked on at a D3. I'm trying to play overseas right now, or I'm playing overseas, things like that. So players would start asking me more mental game questions, because it just seemed like they had these questions. So the same way that I came out and put videos online, nobody knew who Dre Baldwin was, but they knew this is this random guy who's making videos to help players get better. That's what they were gravitating towards. And then when they saw that I was doing it every day, they started asking the questions that they had, which was, one question was, Dre, how do you drive yourself to keep showing up to the gym every day, even though, like you said, you're trying to play overseas, but right now you're at home in Miami, you know, in an empty gym practicing. Why do you keep practicing? You know, what keeps you going? So that was the discipline part of it. Then players would say, well, you know, I practice every day, Dre. I'm using your drills and I'm getting better. But then when I get in the game, I'm not using any of my skills. It seems like I freeze up. I'm getting performance anxiety. I'm nervous. You know, what can I do about that? That was the confidence aspect. And then players will say, well, Dre, I see that you didn't make your high school team until you were a senior. Well, I'm a junior and I just got cut from my high school team. What's going to keep me going and drive me to keep practicing and maybe give it another try next year as a senior? That was a mental toughness aspect. And players will say, hey, you play overseas, but, you know, I don't know how to play overseas. I can't find any information about playing overseas. How were you able to make it happen? And I mean, as a side note, to this day, most of the material about how to play basketball overseas was created by me. So I knew it wasn't out there because I had to figure it out on my own. So that was the personal initiative aspect. So around 2010, I started making this video every Monday called The Weekly Motivation, which is where I would just take some mental aspect that I was just thinking of. I'd be in my car driving and I would just put my camera on and just record myself while the car is moving. And I would just be talking about something mental to help people, because I felt like people wanted this. They were asking about these mental things. So I said, all right, let me just do one video a week. I'm putting out 2-3 basketball videos every day. But every Monday, I would do this weekly motivation. And I did the weekly motivation every Monday for about 400 weeks in a row. And those 400 videos basically laid the foundation for the Work on Your Game, the podcast/masterclass that we have going every day now, over 1,600 episodes. It laid the foundation for a lot of the material in my book, Work on Your Game, a lot of the material in my Mirror Motivation and Mental Handbook, and a bunch of the books that I've written. Was the foundation was laid from those videos where I was just talking about these mental game things. And then I started to get messages from people who were not athletes. And they would say, Dre, I don't play ball, but I subscribe to you and I follow you just to get that video every Monday. And I want to let you know that the stuff you're talking about is not just for sports. It applies to all of life. And that's what planted the seed in my mind. Like, okay, even if I don't play basketball, when I stop playing basketball, I still have an audience that I can serve, because these mental game things apply for people who work at office jobs, students, trainers, coaches, players. It applies to anybody in life. So that's where that seed got planted in my mind that I could use this. So in conclusion, to answer your question, the work on your game philosophy is all about taking the mental tools necessary to succeed in sports and teaching how they apply in business and life. And it consists of four specific principles. Number one, the discipline of showing up every day to do the work. Number two, the confidence to put yourself out there boldly and authentically. The mental toughness to continue showing up, doing the work, putting yourself out there, even when the success you're expecting to achieve is yet to be achieved. And the fourth, personal initiative to go make things happen instead of waiting for things to happen.
Right, man. And I think everyone that's listening, like, they ask, you know, I'll get questions about this too. And it's funny because I'll actually just shoot them, you know, your contact, not contact, but just, you know, your podcast. I'll say, hey, this is the person I'm talking about. Even other coaches around me, you know, I share your content because, you know, I'll share some of the things that you're saying. And it's not necessarily like I'm just taking what you're saying, but I'm saying, hey, you know, this has worked for me. I've learned this from someone who doesn't know they're a mentor to me. But basically, you know, it's almost like just kind of passing along the baton. But no, I absolutely agree with everything you're saying. And I actually took those principles that you just talked about with the work on your game mindset. And I feel like that's where the start of everything that started happening for me started to happen. Just taking, you know, the discipline of, all right, I got to show up when I need to. The mental toughness when I got fired, I'm working at Sears. I worked 6 or 7 jobs in a year, but I'm still continuing to train athletes for free. Still, you know, trying to Instagram and put videos out there so players know I'm training, you know, spending money to go fly to Washington to train athletes, you know, real story, you know, spending like $500, but then it all came back. And I don't think enough people really realize that you need to have pillars. You know, I know you just spoke about them, but one thing I wanted to touch on as well is what are some, I would say, at least the episode with Wes, I know like you had him on episode 883, you guys talk about being a dog and being competitive. I would say, what are some characteristics that you've seen in those that are successful in business and maybe the average person that maybe the average person wants to get to? What are some things that you see as far as like a disparity that the average person can start doing, can start working on to get to the position of someone that they say is successful?
So you're asking, what can someone do to become successful?
Yeah, be successful. Like, what are the mental characteristics that you've seen that maybe the average person lacks that maybe the successful person does have?
I think one of the most important ones is discipline. Showing up every single day and doing the work. And the thing about discipline is that it's not always exciting. Actually, discipline is only exciting when you begin something and you know that you have a plan. That's exciting because you just started. Is the first, you know, first day. I have this whole concept called the third day that I talk about. I talked about it on the show. I talked about it in my books. But once you get into a routine of doing something over and over again, it's not exciting anymore, especially if you're tired, especially if things aren't always working the way you want to. You don't always feel like staying disciplined. And a lot of people aren't able to create and sustain success because they can't create and sustain discipline in their lives. They can't do anything over and over again. They can't deal with the boredom. And that's something that Robert Greene, in his book with 50 Cent, he talks about that, dealing with boredom and mastering the process, which most people are just, they flitting from one thing to the new thing, to the new thing, to the new thing. And you know, social media kind of conditions people to do that. So that's the biggest thing I would say is discipline. When it comes to confidence, confidence is sourced from discipline. The more disciplined you are in showing up every day and doing what you're supposed to do, the more you will be able to believe in yourself because you know that you can actually do that thing because you know you've put the work in. And mental toughness is the third thing that I would say is just the ability to keep going when things aren't working. I mean, I've already told you multiple times here, just from my own journey and you with your journey, things not working, but you continuing to work, continuing to, even if you got to do it on the side, even if you can only devote an hour a day to it, continuing to do something to keep plugging away so that when that opportunity comes, you're ready to do something with it. And the last one, just relating it to my whole philosophy, is personal initiative. Being willing to, you got to be able to start a fire in life is what I tell people. Are you willing to make something happen, or are you just sitting around hoping that something happens to or for you? And sometimes in life, you will get lucky and things will happen to or for you. But most of the time, if you want something to happen, you're going to have to get active. You're going to have to disturb some situation. You're going to have to ring somebody's phone. You're going to have to knock on some doors to get some attention to yourself. If you're not willing to do that, you could be a very talented person, a highly skilled individual, but nobody's going to know about it and you'll never get the return on investment for your game. So the biggest things are, again, just relating right back to what I told you, discipline, the confidence, the mental toughness, and the personal initiative, and being able to have them all the time, not just when you're excited about it, not just when everything is working, not just when you're motivated, but all the time. These need to be who you are, not something that you do.
Right. Absolutely, man. So before we head out of here, I want to make sure I could give you an opportunity to plug your everything you have, you know, as much as you can plug. I want people to find you. I want people to understand that I'm not co-signing this just because you're on my show, but I actually, you know, invest in the stuff that you're doing, investing in your, you know, your books, your podcast, you know, everything, because I find it very valuable and it's helped bring me to the position that I'm in now, where I have an audience, where people listen to me, where people are willing to pay me to work with their players. So Dre, where can people find you? Social media, email, how can people reach out to you? And secondly, where can people find your books? Where can they find your game group? You know, I want to plug as much as you have in the show notes and in this podcast itself.
Absolutely. So first of all, I appreciate you for having me on. And also, like you said, you've been a member of my material and found my stuff for such a long time. So I'm glad that I've been able to provide the value and even the evolution from where it was first just basketball drills. Maybe you were trying to work on your crossover, but now it's more of a business side and personal development thing. So I'm glad that you've been able to grow right alongside with me. And to address what you asked about there, I'm on, for anyone to find me, I'm on every social media platform. I don't use TikTok. I'm on everything else though. So Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube. I'm on all of those platforms. I publish on all of them and every day. So whichever one you like or whichever ones you like, just go on there and look my name up. I'm sure the links will be in the show notes and you can follow me there. As far as the materials that I have a lot of stuff. But what I've found, Xavier, is if I give people too many things, then they do nothing. So I'm going to give y'all one place to go. The first place you should start with any of my material is to get a free copy of my book called The Mirror of Motivation. That is a physical book. I will ship it to you worldwide, anywhere that you live. We got UPS trucks. We got planes, stamps, all of that. So it doesn't matter where you live, we'll get it to you. Let me tell you why you want this book. You want the mirror of motivation because anyone who's listened to this show, if you listen to this whole interview, you have some goals. You have some things you wish to achieve in life, I'm sure of it. And I'm also 100% sure that you're willing to do the work. If someone would just show you, or you already know what it is, you are willing to do the work if you have a reasonable belief that that work is going to produce a result. So I think everyone here fits both of those. The challenge is most people never get clear on the third thing that you're going to need to reach your goals in life. And the third thing is, you got to figure out who you need to be. What type of person do you need to be when you approach another person, when you walk out into life? How are you presenting yourself? What is your energy? How do you feel about yourself? Who do you see when you look in the mirror? These are questions that many people never ask themselves. And therefore, even though they do all the hard work and they quote unquote do everything right, they do not get the result that they want. I wrote the book, The Mirror of Motivation, to help you get clear on who you need to be as a person. And I want you to note that that book is, the title of the book is The Mirror of Motivation. So it's not about me hyping you up. It's not about anybody else inspiring you. It is about you looking in the mirror and getting what you need. I give you the frameworks for you to give yourself what you need as consistently, as often as you want, so that you approach the world in the right energy, with the right frame of mind, so that when you take the same actions as before you had asked the question, who do I need to be, you will get completely different results. Anyone who's listening to me right now, you have been in a situation in life where you were trying something, trying, doing things, and it wasn't working, even though you felt like it was the right formula. Then when your energy changed, you did the exact same thing, and you got a completely different result. Why is that? It's because you're the being. That's the part that you need to really focus on controlling. Most people spend their whole lives focusing on doing. They never ask themselves about the being, and that's why their doing does not produce the having that they want. So how do you get this book? You go to mirrorofmotivation.com. So just the title of the book, minus the word the, mirrorofmotivation.com. The book is already paid for. All you do is cover a small shipping charge, and we ship that book to you worldwide, anywhere that you live. And then once you get that book, then we'll tell you about all the other stuff we got going on. But I want to keep it simple enough that everybody can remember it, mirrorofmotivation.com.
Wow. See, there are things in there that Dre was talking about that I didn't even touch on in this podcast, but it's just who he is to continue to give value. Like you talked about the being. I think even one of the exercises you gave was a while ago, just writing down who you want to be, you know, like, you know, what characteristics does this person have? And that's something I did, I think, in college. I want to say like my senior year, and looking at the difference between the two people, who you are now versus who you want to be, and how can you cover that ground, right? Be that person. And I even want to plug, even in the show notes as well, you know, the being, I think, I can't remember exactly what the TED Talk was, but it was the story about where the basketball player, where he pretended to be another player, and yes, then he played very well. Yeah. Can you remind me the name of that that TED Talk?
Yeah, how to be confident when you're not. There's right. Also, so, dear Dre Colwin, how to be confident when you're not.
Okay. So I'm going to plug that one in there too. Highly recommend everything Dre does. Like I said, I'm co-signing him because I know what he does is effective. I know he does works, and he's going to give you a ton of value. So Dre, thank you so much for coming on for this hour. I want to thank you again just for giving as much value as you've given, and hopefully we can get you on the show again sometime in the future, man.
Yeah, we'll love to do that. And actually, on the things you just talked about, I got a book on that too, but we'll tell everybody about that after they get the Mirror of Motivation. But I would love, I would love to come on again, man. You just let me know and we can do it again. I appreciate the time. Appreciate the opportunity.
For sure, Dre. You have a great day, man. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Same here. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Basketball and Barbells podcast. I really hope you all got major value from today's episode. Please leave a rating and review of the show, and don't forget to tune into the next episode.